This is the Inch Podcast, a production of InsideCollegeHockey.com. Now, let's send it to our podcast host, Joe Gladyszewski.
Hello, everyone. Great to be back with another Inch Podcast recorded Wednesday, July 13th, 2011. I am Joe Gladyszewski. We got the band back together on a, what some would call a historic day for college hockey as the announcement, formal announcement of the National Collegiate Hockey Conference took place earlier today. We'll touch on that and also some off-season coaching changes and plenty of deterioration, of course, in store for you as a little summertime podcast for the college hockey community. Pleased to welcome in from the CCHA senior writer James V. Dowd. Howdy, James.
Good evening, Gladdy. How's your summer?
Summer's been great. It's been great. Also from the affected conference of the WCHA, senior writer Jess Myers. Howdy, Jess.
I'm feeling very affected right now.
Yes.
Good to be here.
With an A.
Good to be somewhere. We're not sure where here is yet, but good to be.
And, of course, Inch editor Mike Eidelbus. Hi, boss.
Greetings. WCHA's new slogan, now 50% less W.
Well, they didn't really lose the western part of it because they lost the entire nation.
Yes.
So, let's get into this. Of course, you everyone listening knows the news hook here. National Collegiate Hockey Conference will begin play in the 2013-14 season. That's the same time that the Big Ten Hockey Conference will also begin play. Membership to include, as of right now, Denver, Colorado College, Nebraska, Omaha, North Dakota, and Minnesota Duluth from the WCHA. And CCHA member Miami. Nebraska-Omaha has been in a lot of leagues.
Working on their third in 5 years, I think.
Yeah, it would be. Yep. It would be.
A lot of sweater patches sewn on and torn off.
Yeah, some talk that Notre Dame is strongly being pursued. We'll keep an eye on that as things develop, as well as possible invitation to Western Michigan. I'll start with Bus, who kind of has our national perspective in mind most of the time. What are your thoughts right now?
Well, I think that, it's obviously certainly a shifting of the landscape, but I think, the one thing we kind of lose sight of is that it's still a long way away. I mean, it's right in our faces now because it's the summer and, it's been rumored for a while. And I think a lot of people like to kind of, fans and media alike kind of like to, throw these what if scenarios out there and say, well, what's going to happen the rest of WCHA? What's going to happen to the CHA? CCHA, I should say. We already know what happened to the CHA. What's going to happen to Notre Dame? Where is this team going to end up? And, really, there's a lot of time for the rest of this to shake out. I mean, it's I think a lot of people at this point in time are kind of, saying they're pointing to this and the Big Ten conference announcement as the demise of college hockey as we know it. And, yeah, it's going to be different. But we've got a long way to go. So let's look at the big picture here and not take such a micro view on this process. I think a lot of people are really maybe looking too closely at and kind of jumping ahead and saying, well, projecting how dominoes may fall when we've got more than two seasons for this to play out.
That's a good point. Jess, you're closest to most of these programs. What's your take in the early going?
Yeah, I'm not one of these sky is falling types, and there are plenty of them all of a sudden, especially if you're part of what's been affectionately called the left behind group. I'm thinking specifically the three schools in Minnesota that did not get an invite to go elsewhere. I'm interested. I won't say I'm excited. I'm interested to see how this will all shake out. And it seems to me, you know, the most interesting thing I learned today was that this is something that's been talked about not just since April when the coaches got together and, you know, something supposedly happened that caused the likes of Denver and North Dakota to want to break away formally from the WCHA. It sounds like this has been something that's been talked about since about the time the Penn State announcement was made. A lot of people knowing that that would lead to Big Ten hockey eventually, and that some schools wanted a contingency plan in place, and now they have it, I guess.
Doubt?
Yes, I kind of feel the same as Jess. I'm interested to see how it shakes out. Obviously, it's had a pretty, I guess, between the Big Ten and this, there's been a pretty big effect on the CCHA and the smaller programs, but you know, in a way, I'm excited to see what comes of it, and you know, it may make for some more competitive nature between some of those schools that have been mired in that 6th through 12th place, or you know, 6th through 11th place area in the CCHA without much ability to break through because of the big powers. So I think it could also be exciting from that aspect of opportunity of teams playing against schools of comparable size and budget and such.
Yeah, one thing that Buss alluded to but didn't mention by name, could this be an opportunity for Alabama Huntsville in some way or some format? I have to think that they will be making the requisite phone calls to, you know, get people online and begin discussions, whether that's a repurposed CCHA or the WCHA, which did an official statement today from Commissioner Bruce McLeod, say that they intend to remain a fully functional operating league even after the defection of seven programs 2 years from now.
They're not going away. I mean, they've been around for 60 years in some form or another. I was most interested in, I think, Mike, you and I talked about this on instant message today at one point, but article in the Minneapolis paper today quoting Troy Judding, the coach at Minnesota State, and Bob Motzko, the coach at St. Cloud State, who both said, hey, cool, you know, we're still going to play hockey. We're going to be competitive. And I've got to think, as you alluded to, James, schools like that and programs like that have got to be liking the opportunity to suddenly be in a 6 or 7 team league or an 8 team league instead of a 12 team league with, you know, gigantic programs ahead of you that, you know, I'm not going to say are insurmountable, but are a pretty huge obstacle to you finishing higher up in the league. You know, this is a real opportunity for those schools and some others to contend for a conference title more often than they have in the past, I think.
Then let's say you're, and I'm going to use Minnesota State because the Mankato Free Press is college hockey beat writer Shane Frederick wrote a great column the other day about this impending announcement and how it affects the Mavericks in particular. You know, Minnesota State's had some solid teams. They've had some not so good teams, but generally, I mean, you can they're competitive within the WCHA. You know, more often than not, they're on the road during the first round of the playoffs. But, you know, you can generally count on them 7, 8, 9 in that area. And Shane pulled out some great stats. He said that and I'm going off the top of my head, but when you look at the, so I might be a little bit off, but I'm in the ballpark. Mankato against the WCHA leftovers, as we've kind of dubbed them, over the last 5 years, .615 winning percentage. Against the teams that are on the way out in 2 years, they're at about a .300 winning percentage. If I'm a Mankato fan, I'm pretty darn excited about what the future might hold. You know, not that it's, you know, maybe a little disappointing that you don't get to see Minnesota and Wisconsin and North Dakota and those type of teams come in. but you know, your chances of being successful have gone up exponentially, I think. I mean, why wouldn't you be excited about that?
Jess, do you get a sense for any of the rivalries that maybe get less publicity that would still be strong in the remainder of the in the WCHA as it might exist? You know, well, like Minnesota State, St. Cloud, or
sure. I mean, I think those rivalries will be heightened to a certain extent. And you know, don't kid yourself. If you're Minnesota Duluth, you're still going to want to get St. Cloud State on your schedule. You're going to want to get Bemidji State on your schedule on a pretty regular basis. And I think rivalries like that would even be heightened by this. You know, if you're Bemidji State, you suddenly have something else to prove when you play Minnesota Duluth because, oh, you know, you guys are the big shots. You took off to that other conference. You know, if you beat a team like that now, I think it means even a little bit more. So rivalries like that aren't going to go away. You know, you may not play as often. You may not play every year in each other's building. But I think overall, you know, those kind of traditional games will be fine.
You know, Gladdy, there's two other things that we talk about amongst ourselves that also come into play here. The one that I think of is, you know, people from the leftover conferences or the teams that are sort of left behind at this point. You know, fans saying, well, we're not going to get to see Michigan. We're not going to get to see
Denver.
Minnesota, Wisconsin, Denver, which begs the question again, well, are you a fan of your team, or are you a fan of, or do you just go when it's an exciting matchup? You know, and the other thing that came to mind when I was listening to the announcement today is, you know, it looks great on paper, this the new National College Hockey Conference, which is the worst name in the history of organized naming.
We can just call it the Federal League. I've decided.
the how about the niche? NC, well, whatever. Niche. Anyways.
That's actually strangely appropriate.
It is. We should call it the Click. Anyways, because it kind of seems like that a little bit. You know, somebody's got to finish last in that league.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's not all going to be, you know, unicorns and rainbows for all the, for those teams. Somebody's going to finish last. And it's going to be a team that's not used to finishing last.
You're right.
I had that thought today, too. Somebody somewhere tweeted, oh, this is so great. We have, you know, teams that have been to the NCAA tournament. I think all six of them are in, and, you know, they've been to Frozen Fours and they've been this. It's like, yeah, but you don't get six auto bids.
Right. Right.
Yeah, you go, if you're a WCHA team, you go from a top six finish means you have home ice to a top six finish means you may be in last place.
Right.
That's going to take some getting used to.
I mean, I know, you know, I don't know whether like I said before, we're a long ways off. I mean, we're 2 years from any of this actually happening. But, you know, you like to think, and I think it makes perfect sense for the two, the remaining CCHA teams and the remaining WCHA teams to somehow, I don't know, formally come together, but, you know, at least make an arrangement or agreement and, you know, somehow figure out a way to coexist and survive. I don't know if that's a possibility or not, but, I mean, it seems logical from my perspective.
Yeah, yeah. Now, nobody will be surprised that I have a contrarian viewpoint at some times, but this goes back to one of my college hockey pet peeves, and I usually bring it up around NCAA tournament time. Everyone talks about league, you know. It's just a bunch of conferences. It's just a bunch of teams. And you're looking at individual programs. I mean, and for all the times we've heard about how great the WCHA is and all this, If it's so great, why are you leaving? You know? James, a little more on Miami. What do you think this does for them?
You know, with all the talk about, you know, forming this league, and, you know, certainly I think one of their foremost goals is to get some increased television coverage and you know, build the national profile of these, you know, of these programs. I think that's really what Miami's after. You know, once you know, the Michigan State, Ohio State are gone, and it looks like, you know, Notre Dame would be gone at some point as well. You know, all of a sudden Miami's conference games aren't sexy enough for Friday night television, Saturday night television on a regular basis. And so I think it was just a move where the athletic director there and Coach Blasey and you know, even the school administration as a whole is looking to raise the profile of the school nationally, and, you know, both athletically and academically. So it made sense for them, and that they'll get some increased exposure by playing, you know, playing teams that it'll be appealing matchups on TV every weekend, even if it's, you know, even if it's, you know, may mean that they finish third or fourth. You know, I think it makes sense from that standpoint. But
a lot of people were disappointed and made comments as such in social media outlets, not even so much how things happened or that they happened, but today's presentation came off poorly in many people's eyes. I made a half prediction, half observation that what everyone's excited for amounts to basically handing out a "Hello, my name is" sticker, like you would have at a work convention. And that's really all of the news that came out of today. Excellent reporting by various media outlets led by Brad Schlossman at the Grand Forks Herald. We knew what to expect. You know, we knew who was going to be a part of this. And even with most of a week to prepare, it came off a little sloppy today for basically just saying what the name of the league was. And there was no other news. I mean, no news on a commissioner, no news on a television deal, no news on a tournament format or location. You know, those kinds of things will happen. You know, and as Buss said, there's time to figure this stuff out. But, you know, should we have expected a little more?
It could have just been a press release.
Really, it could have been, yeah.
It should have been, but... And, you know, I don't know if it's just me and the... And I agree with a lot of what you said. I actually agree with everything you said. It did come off kind of sloppy, and it was really much ado about nothing other than, you know, unveiling a horrible name, which was horrible. Did I mention that already?
Yeah.
but there seemed to be a little bit of a, hey, look at us, how smart are we, vibe there.
Yeah, I think that might have that might be preconceived. The audience may have gone in with that viewpoint.
Think so.
I don't think it was necessarily communicated as we're the best, everyone else is terrible.
Not that. I'm saying more of a look at us changing the face of college hockey. Or we're taking things into our own hands and being, you know.
That's more the vibe I got.
We're kind of, you know, we're out in front on this. You know, we're leading the charge.
But I mean, I was going to say that perception, I mean, could also be, if you think about Miami is a really proud institution. You think about everything they've done and all the positive publicity they've tried to generate out of this success in recent years. And you look at North Dakota and the extreme pride that they have in their program. I mean, of course, like, you know, that's the vibe that they're going to put out there, because that's, you know, I think if that's what we're seeing, then it's a success. They want us to think that they're, you know, they're the leaders. They're the ones that are the catalyst for change. So I don't think that's by accident.
You know, going back to Miami, too, and I think that there's some of this with with the other teams that have come together to form this league. With the creation of the Big Ten Conference in a couple of years, I think what you're seeing in the formation of this conference are six schools, you know, potentially seven, maybe eight, depending on how big they decide to grow. Looking at what might be left in the WCHA and CCHA, and you know, when things get done in those conferences, it's by a popular vote. And you know, the teams that have broken off to form the new league, and the ones going to the Big Ten are used to funding things at a certain level, and the ones that are not joining new leagues, at least right now, are you know, a little bit more financially challenged, I guess is a fair way to put it.
Yeah, they operate under different means.
Yes. And I think that these teams that have broken away, you know, once the Big Ten teams, you know, formed their conference, I think that there were some teams looking back and thinking, you know, we were the majority, the slight majority, and now, you know, we're the minority, and this, you know, we don't really want to change the way we operate. We, you know, we want to do things at the highest levels, and, you know, for whatever reason, there are other teams in our league that, you know, will band together and maybe decide that that's not the route they want to take.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, that's fair. Anything else on this, James, Jess?
I guess we'll see with time.
Yeah, we'll see.
What does anybody in the East think about this? That's what I wonder.
I think that Hockey East is the best.
Yeah, well, yeah. The I think that the geographic divide in college hockey maybe is almost like a, you know, what do they call those, a two-way mirror, where I can see through, but you just see a mirror?
One-way mirror?
I don't know. Like
something like that. I know what you're saying.
You can look. I think the East is more understanding and appreciative and pays more attention to the West than the West when they look East. I think they look about as far east as Ann Arbor and then they stop.
Well, Oxford.
Well, yeah.
I think you just described Inch, actually. But.
Yeah. Yeah. We're biased against both regions.
Yeah. We hate everybody equally.
Yes. So yeah, it's not going to change the day-to-day operations. The biggest impact in the East would possibly be maybe if some of the Western-based Atlantic hockey schools, Western New York-based and Pennsylvania, were to maybe join up with some of the existing CCHA. If that were to happen, incentive there would be that they could offer the full 18 scholarships. Which Atlantic Hockey caps it at 12, I'm pretty sure.
Yes, they do.
So, you know, there's some incentive there with that and draw.
And there's been some talk from teams, some of the teams in Atlantic Hockey about wanting to get to that. You know, obviously Quinnipiac wanted to.
Well, yeah, they left for ECAC hockey.
No, yeah. But they can offer 18 scholarships, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
That was their desire. I think that, you know, maybe Niagara has that same desire, and maybe Robert Morris.
Yeah, Niagara, Robert Morris, Canisius, Mercyhurst. Those might be the four that would most closely eye a switch. RIT would be interesting to me.
Yeah, I thought about that.
But we'll see what happens. They can't offer scholarships anyway. Because they're a Division III institution playing up. So that's kind of where that stands as far, you know, as
an intriguing one is Air Force.
Yeah. I agree.
You know, logically, you look at what the remainder is in the WCHA, and you know, Air Force can definitely compete with those teams.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
You know, St. Cloud State I think you'd have to consider them the class of what's left, or what would be left, or what will be left.
Now, over the last 10 years, that's fair to say.
But Air Force has done quite well for themselves, obviously, and
right.
In Atlantic Hockey, and you know, do they really want to leave?
Yeah, interesting.
The one point I made, I think, with some of you, and I'll make it publicly here, is I hope, you know, when it surfaced, I think it was Monday, that Northern Michigan has been contacted about going to the WCHA, and you know, there's talk now about Alaska as well, possibly becoming a WCHA team. There was a Twitter blow up where a lot of people said, "Well, say goodbye to the CCHA. You know, they'll have to merge the two conferences and make one conference or something like that." And I certainly, you know, for the good of college hockey in general, I hope that doesn't happen. For the simple fact that I think a 6 or 8 team conference is better than, you know, or two of those is better than 1 14-team conference. What was great about College Hockey America when it existed was it was a destination sitting out there where if you're a Division III program thinking, hey, maybe we can compete at the Division I level, you've got a place to go. And I think with a number of smaller conferences, you provide that. But with a 14-team conference, you prohibit some of that.
Yep. Agreed again. Agreed on that.
Even if you get into a 14-team conference as an upstart, you're looking at finishing 14th, which doesn't have as much appeal as finishing 6th
unless
or 8th.
Unless you're RIT.
Yeah.
Right.
Then you correct. Win.
Yeah.
Wayne State's probably kicking themselves right now.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
No, I don't know. I'm just...
Who knows? The other big story of the summer has been a significant shakeup in coaching hires and changes and appointments. This obviously happened a lot earlier, but we haven't had a podcast since a lot of this stuff went down. And recently we found out that Western Michigan will also be under new leadership next season. But new faces at Clarkson, Michigan State, Michigan Tech, Penn State, of course, announced a coach. And as a result, Princeton, then Providence, Massachusetts Lowell, and Union. Any of those moves really stand out one way or another to you guys? I guess pick one or two and give me your thoughts on those. I'll start with James.
Obviously.
And Western, I guess.
I would say, well, let me start with Western then. Obviously, I don't really have anybody to put up as a candidate or anything at this point. It's so soon after the move. But, you know, one thing to think about with them, they had just given Blashill, and congratulations to Coach Blashill and to his family. It's a great opportunity for him to move on to the NHL.
But, he's with the Detroit Red Wings.
Yeah. So they, you know, they had... I want to say it was $275,000 a year, or the ability to make $275,000 a year. That's a lot of money for them to throw around and hire a potentially big name or somebody that they might not have been able to attract to Western Michigan before. But as for the two coaching changes that affect, affect the CCHA the most, seeing Mel Pearson go back to his alma mater, I think that should be a good fit for Michigan Tech. You know, I've gotten to know Mel pretty well personally, both of my experiences as a student journalist in Michigan and since then covering the CCHA. Just a fantastic guy and an excellent recruiter. And I think we saw during this year's NCAA tournament what a magic touch he can have for coaching, particularly on the defensive end. So I think that's a really good move, and it'll be a productive move for Michigan Tech. And then there's Tom Anastas. That's difficult to know what to say.
We talked about that, you know, before.
That'll be we'll see what happens with that.
And we'll talk about it again, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that'll be there. Jess, anything stand out in your viewing of the college hockey landscape?
Well, we mentioned Mel Pearson a little bit, and I'm very interested to see what he will do there. It was interesting the way that went down, too. Many rumors that he would be taking the job and that he was going to be named any day. And then there was this weird kind of week or two delay where supposedly he had turned down the job and was staying in Ann Arbor. And then out of nowhere they announced, oh, by the way, he is taking the job. So I'm kind of wondering, you know, what went into that and if there was offers and counteroffers and the like. But I do think, you know, that's something that had been rumored for many years, too. I mean, I want to say 8 years ago when Jamie Russell took the job, there was talk at that time that Mel Pearson was the guy, knowing that he was an alum, knowing his track record of success in Ann Arbor. So this seems like a move that was long overdue, not only this year, but was long overdue in a lot of ways. And I'm anxious to see what happens. Obviously an interesting opportunity for Michigan Tech as a program now, too, being in a six-team league like we talked to, or you know, maybe an eight-team league like we talked about, with some of those bigger and higher-budget schools out of the picture, you know, maybe more of a chance for them to compete for league titles and for home ice and some things that they haven't seen in a while there.
And you know, it's not only – you have the easier sell, I guess, trying to get people to Michigan Tech when you're in a smaller league and you find it easier to become competitive much faster than they might have been able to, but also – Mel's experience and all the NHL players he helped develop over his time at Michigan, I mean, that's something you can't look past when you're trying to get maybe those few top-tier pieces. You know, they've got a lot to overcome geographically and climate-wise, you know, just kind of buried up there and maybe not as attractive of a place to go as Ann Arbor or I guess some of the other teams, the other schools they might compete against, the Twin Cities, Madison, but you know, now they got a coach who's proven that he can help turn guys into legitimate, you know, guys who can have long, drawn-out NHL careers. So I think they've got a lot going for him.
Yeah, if you're recruiting a kid and you're showing them Houghton Hancock, which, as you said, is a small town, it's isolated, and you're competing, you know, for a recruit telling him you're going to live here versus living in Madison or living in Minneapolis or living in Denver, it's one thing. If you're recruiting them to go there versus living in Bemidji or Mankato or St. Cloud or Marquette, it's suddenly a much different thing.
Yep, that's it. A lot of shakeups in ECAC hockey. of the eight vacancies that have been filled, at least four of them had five had some connection to ECAC hockey. It started, I think, with Penn State and Guy Gadowski. Great hire, a good choice. He's got the right energy, and he gets to build a program from scratch. And I think that was one of the big draws to that position. And I know a lot of very, very qualified, successful coaches were in that mix and showed a lot of interest. So certainly an attractive opportunity there for Gadowski, who really led a resurgence at Princeton, and they've been one of the top teams in ECAC hockey over the last 4 years. And then Princeton filled that with a strong assistant that came from St. Lawrence in Bob Pryor. Clarkson made a change in getting rid of George Roll, and they added another highly respected longtime assistant coach in Casey Jones, most recently at Cornell, formerly at Ohio State, a proven recruiter, and now he gets to have his own bench. And then of course there was Union and Providence, which had a lot of intertwining, actually, that Union's longtime coach, eight years, Nate Lehman, went to Providence. His associate head coach, Rick Bennett, was promoted. Of course, Rick played at Providence. Has been a big part of Union's recent success. And I think that one will be the transition that has the least amount of upheaval. You know, I think it'll be the smoothest. There won't be a lot of drastic changes in operating methods. Union returns a very strong lineup again. You know, of course, they're in the national tournament for the first time last year. So I think that that will be one to watch there, and we'll see what happens with that one.
Yeah, I think that pretty much covers it. I don't know your impressions of Bob Pryor. I thought that was kind of an out of left field hire, as opposed to Tom Anastas, who we mentioned in the piece we ran.
Yeah.
Shortly after all these hires were made, wasn't just out of left field. That was, you know, 2 miles down the road from the ballpark.
Yeah, Pryor. I don't know him very much personally. I mean, I would recognize him for sure, but I've never spoken with him, so I don't have a real good feel on that. But you know, St. Lawrence is a team that gets the most out of what they have. I mean, it's a small arena, a very small school, and they're turning out a lot of good players. I mean, they've got guys in consideration for All-America almost every year. And when that happens so consistently, especially with defensemen, it seems lately, you know, they've got to be doing things the right way there. And Joe Marsh, highly respected among ECAC hockey folks. So that's a situation at St. Lawrence, and that'll be an interesting one to watch. So,
and of course,
Western's looking, yeah,
is open. I think one thing, and James can probably attest to this better than I can, but it seems that you know, not just upping the ante for Blashill before he departed, and you know, I know a lot of Western Michigan fans are disappointed. And rightfully so, but you know, on the flip side, when Mike Babcock and Ken Holland call you out of the blue, two guys you don't know, call you and ask you if you'd like to interview for an assistant coaching position with the Red Wings, you know, that's a call you take. And Blashill's, you know, he has stated that his goal was to, you know, be an NHL coach someday. But getting back to the original point, you know, just in the last year or so, and I think a lot of it has to do with Blashill and his vision, you know, it seems like Western has really has really made a commitment to the hockey program. And it seems like something that's going to continue with the new coach, you know. It's, you know, it starts obviously with the attitudes of the players and kind of that work ethic and pride that Blashill instilled. But it seems like the university as a whole has decided to make a greater commitment to hockey. And you know, if they can maintain that, and it's something that they are truly committed to over the long haul, I think that can still be a very solid program.
Yeah, I think the thread that goes through a lot of these changes and a lot of these programs is that these people have proven or shown that you can win there, you know. And as we talked about earlier when discussing conference shakeups, you know, you can get programs into the national tournament. I mean, Clarkson was there twice under George Roll. Union. I mean, people said for years you'll never win at Union. And look what Nate Lehman did with that program. You know, Princeton, same thing. You know, these things are happening, and I think that's what Blashill had really done, and people should certainly miss him for leaving, but also thank him for proving, you know what, we can do something here. And we're not just going to sit back and take our lumps and say, okay, it's Notre Dame's turn, and it's Michigan's turn, and it's Miami's turn, and we'll always be back here. You know, give credit to these guys and these programs for really making a statement. And I think that's the thread that runs through this entire coaching a situation.
I agree with that, Gladdy. Especially, you know, particularly at Western. For so long, they just were the same year in and year out. And they'd have some talented players, and, you know, Blash Hill showed how quickly you can turn it around with the right attitude and setting the right tone and the right culture. And, you know, I think it's important that, you know, they take those lessons learned and the confidence that they instilled there. And they've got some great, they lost Max Campbell, they lose Jerry Kuhn, but, you know, Ian Slater will be back. You look at some of the elder leadership on that team, the upperclassmen on that team that, really bought into the program last year. And, you know, getting the right guy in there, they could definitely be in the picture for a long time to come.
Yeah, I think if they find a goaltender, they're probably going to be a top four CCHA team. I mean, I would put them in the top four.
And I mean, you know, they might have it on their roster. I mean, Nick Paisalini, he was pretty good last year for parts of the year, and I know.
He played at Quinnipiac and was actually pretty good there.
Yep, I think he's really talented. He had you know, some personal difficulties that that took him away from Quinnipiac and eventually landed him in Kalamazoo. But you know, if he can keep you know, keep things straight between his ears, you know, and that's true of any goalie. You know, it's very much psychological.
Especially the Michigan goalies. Grad said.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah, I know it as well as anybody, but but yeah, you know, if
point made, Don. We're
not naming names, Billy Sauer, but
hey, don't pick on Billy Sauer. That's just mean.
Oh boy.
Since we're talking about Western, did any of you see the PowerPoint they put together?
I did.
Basically saying, pick us for the at the time unnamed conference. Interesting look at, you know, a program, as we've talked about, that a couple years ago was one of those that was talked about as, you know, being on the brink of extinction or being in some trouble. This painted obviously a rosy picture as what its job was, but, you know, noted that, for example, the Kalamazoo Grand Rapids area is one of the top 45 TV markets in the country, and, you know, noted that Western Michigan is a Division I school and had, you know, John Saunders and some of the noted alumni on there. Very interesting, interesting take on Western Michigan for, you know, for a program that, with a few rare exceptions, hasn't been a big player on the national scene.
I think it's been a sleeping giant, though. I think you know, that PowerPoint obviously is going to be rosy, and it's a marketing piece for the athletic director and for the university. But a lot of those things are true. You know, it wasn't just fluff.
You know, and that part of Michigan too, that region, I think it's just fantastic, that whole, you know, West Coast where you get the dunes and Grand Rapids is a nice city. I mean, it's a good region. So and obviously a hockey state. So good stuff to see. And you wish the best for a program like that to have some growth here on a national level down the road.
All right, deterioration, fellas.
You hopped right into that.
Well.
Remember when we used to gradually segue into deterioration?
Yeah, remember when you just slide into it?
It's called deterioration because it would happen. No, I thought we were going to get there.
It's strictly scheduled, and you know.
Now you just it's like shifting gears on a car. It's just like, you know,
spontaneity has its time and place.
We give the people what they want. We have to schedule it.
I don't know if they want this.
Anybody? Latest happenings, thoughts?
The U.S. women are pretty good at soccer.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. Let's start there.
I'm sure Gladdy really wants to.
We have rejected deterioration already.
No, this will deteriorate. Just like America's interest in the World Cup on Saturday about 5:06.
Gladdy, that was a carefully picked target to try and accelerate deterioration on your part.
How so?
I just thought that soccer and women's soccer and people jumping on bandwagons and
yeah, all things I just love.
I was going to say I feel like you would have something to say about that.
Well, it was just great to see my Twitter timeline so full of pride and impressive platitudes for a team that these people have seen play twice ever, both within the last 4 days. You know,
people like Hope Solo because she's got a cool name.
Yeah, I guess.
Because she made the Kessel Run in 12 parsecs.
Right.
Oh, no, wait, that's Han Solo.
Yeah, I don't watch that show.
And because at one time, she got kicked off the team for speaking her mind. So.
Yeah, that's the American way.
Yeah, right. I feel like some people have forgotten that.
What do you mean forgotten? A lot of people don't know that.
They true.
Turned okay. it on with 11 seconds left in the Brazil game and said, "Oh, geez, I maybe should watch this."
Yeah.
I heard she killed a dude on TV.
That was never proven.
Oh.
Where, no, that was Josh Hamilton.
What's that?
That was Josh Hamilton? Oh, doubt.
Easy. Now we're deteriorating.
That'll do it.
You want Jeff, Jeff Howe's ears perked up.
All right.
Man, that's outstanding.
Is it true that he's got the same agent as Espen Knutsen? Oh.
Oh, wow.
What is going on right now? All right.
Dave Winfield's seagull.
Yeah. Randy Johnson's seagull.
Randy Johnson's seagull is still one of the greatest all-time sports clips ever.
Yeah, I agree.
To see the thing just explode.
Yeah, feathers.
So what's your beef with the women's soccer? Just that everybody's all gung-ho about it and won't be on Sunday?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Gladdy, who won the LPGA thing?
Because
you would know this.
I do know this. Sohan Rua, I believe. Something like that.
Or did they not get to the winner because they were talking about the Broadmoor World Arena?
Yeah, I was waiting for her to pop up in the press conference today.
Yeah, she should have spoken in the press conference. Well, they just had terrible weather for that. There were days of delays and lightning and thunderstorms.
Really?
Oh, yeah, it was brutal.
Because that's an area that doesn't get a lot of rain normally. But
well, they did last weekend. Yeah,
I was at the Broadmoor like in early June, and they were already setting up risers and tents and all of that. So it's a big production.
Well, fortunately, during the rain delays, Ken Ralph came in and told them all about the history of equestrian shows in Front Range.
Sure.
And how historic they are. So they had something to do to pass the time.
He's the Ben Stein of athletic directors.
Stretch it out, they said. Somebody's in the background whispering.
Fill some time!
Short.
So.
Who do you have in the Open, Gladdy?
That's right, British Open.
Oh, yeah. I have...
Kind of have to go with Rory McIlroy, don't you?
Roars is he's the hot shot right now.
Did you call him Roars?
Oh yeah, that's what everyone calls him.
I call him Mac.
I'm gonna call him L.
He's got it.
I'm gonna call him Roy.
I'll have the L painted on my chest when we're all there. Somebody else will have the Roy.
I don't know if I have a pick to it. You know, Martin Keimer, still up there among the top players in the world. I think he might have something going on there.
I don't even know who that is.
Yeah, he's German. He won the PGA last year at Whistling Straits, I think.
He did?
Yeah.
Mm. He's playing with...
Yeah, he was the guy when Johnson put his thing in the bunker there.
Excuse me?
Wait a minute.
He put his thing in the bunker?
What? Somebody's Johnson put something? What?
Yeah.
Was that on YouTube?
For a very short while, it was.
Yeah, but you have to log in.
And then Kmar, the discount McGit. No. So Martin Keimer, he's German.
Yes.
I would like to see Luke Donald play.
Yeah,
well,
he's number one in the world. Hasn't won one yet.
How can he be Lee number Westwood. One in the world without winning something?
But he hasn't won a major.
Oh, okay.
He's generally been pretty junk in the majors, hasn't he? He was okay at the Masters, I think.
Of course, I follow NASCAR, so you can be number one in the world without winning anything. Dale Jr. has proven. Again and again.
That's popularity, though. There's a difference.
True. True.
Who is number one in NASCAR right now?
Carl Edwards has been pretty strong all season. I believe he has fallen behind... Kevin Harvick right now, though. Or maybe one of the Bush brothers.
Billy?
It's Kyle Busch.
Kyle Busch is the leader?
The bad Bush brother, the one everybody hates.
George?
That's right.
Yeah. W?
Dub.
And the biggest news in NASCAR was they had a race that nobody could get to.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was bad.
You know what I say to that? I say good. I say good to all the people who don't get their race. No. I'm going back, you know, the fact that there's only one race at Darlington now, there's only one race in Atlanta, you know, Rockingham might not have any anymore.
There's only one in Fontana, which is maybe one too many.
Yeah, Fontucky.
But, you know, the old places are kind of getting evaporated by these mega corps and... Chicagoland and Kansas and Texas and Vegas are still relatively new. So I just, for the old standbys, stick salute to you guys.
But what was the snafu at the Kentucky track?
It was just, I mean, it's in a remote area south of Cincinnati.
I thought it was right off the interstate.
It is right off the interstate, but that means there's two lanes in each direction.
Oh.
To get there with. And when you've got, you know, I think it's like 100,000+ people.
Yeah.
All trying to get there at the same time.
Yeah.
You just can't get there, and there's no way in or out.
Hmm.
Other than the one road. So, you know,
it was gridlock.
It was gridlocked, and the really messy part, if you were in a car trying to get there, once the race got to be like an hour and a half into it, they actually forced people who were waiting to get in to turn around and leave, because then they were reversing traffic to prepare for people to get out.
Oh, yeah. My God.
So it was just a real mess. I mean, you know, sadly, you know, and they're offering refunds now to people who didn't get in and can turn in their tickets and you know, next year. But, you know, as a guy who once got on a plane and flew to go to a NASCAR race, you know, there are significant investments of time and money that people have made here, and if all that goes for naught, it's going to leave a pretty bitter feeling.
How many people plan that as, you know, a summer vacation?
Right.
Get the family together, let's go to a race.
See, I thought nobody made it there because all the cars in Kentucky were on blocks in people's front yards.
Yeah, they had to turn around walking to the racetrack.
Yeah.
Single file the other way.
Well, you know, I read a piece in the Cincinnati Inquirer. You know, they're interviewing guys who were camping who said, "Oh, even if you were camping, the traffic was bad. I'm only 2 miles from the track, and it took me an hour and a half to drive there." It's like, well, if you're 2 miles from the track, just walk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's 2 miles.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they didn't get on their hover round.
First half baseball thoughts, fellas? Twins, Jess?
They have a pulse.
A what?
Couldn't say that on June 1st, but they have a pulse.
Is he their new left fielder?
Yeah.
Who's their new left fielder?
The Pulse.
Well, hey, and if anybody wants Matt Capps, make us an offer. Because blown saves have become a hallmark. No, they're in the thick of a race in a not very good division, you know.
Yeah, hey, they're like seven out and four seven games out under 500 or something.
And this is a team that on June 1st was 20 games under 500. So it's been a pretty remarkable run, although I don't know if they have it in them to make a run that's going to get them into the playoffs. And if they do, based on past performance, so what? That just means three losses to the Yankees and you're done.
Was
Gladdy, any Derek Jeter thoughts?
Plenty. But
he won the opposite field single derby. That was a good tweet.
Yeah, if they wanted him at All-Star festivities, they should have canceled home run derby and made it opposite field single derby. Derek Jeter has had a nice career. I'm trying to say this as most... Well, we don't have to be politically correct. This is deterioration, right?
Clearly.
If you heard that Josh Hamilton joke, you just realized everything's fair game.
All right. Here's the thing. And Joe Posnanski, baseball columnist who just nails it with perspective, I think, almost every time. Buss and I read him almost daily. And
yes.
His statement on Jeter, I think, was pretty good, that it's just he's been present. He's the most exposed athlete, maybe other than Michael Jordan, in sports history. You know, we've seen his entire career on national television. You know, he's done the Gillette ads. He's done the Gatorade ads. He's been in postseason playoffs. He's been in memorable plays of somewhat significant games. And he's just always there. And I think that as a result, that comes from, you know, with that comes a little bit of eyeing him with either complete adoration or complete disgust. Maybe some people feel the same. Bus maybe Notre Dame football, you know?
Yeah.
You're always there. Whether you're in first place or 10th place, and, you know, you're always going to be a topic of conversation. And growing up in upstate New York and being a part of, you know, the coverage and a lot of Yankee fans around here, you know, I've taken it upon myself to kind of, you know, the checks and balances so much of, oh, Jeter's awesome, Jeter's this, Jeter's that, and then, you know, you get, hold on a second here. He's never been the best player on his team. He's accumulated a lot of hits, all singles. 75% of his career hits are singles. Many of his signature moments, either he really didn't have a big part in or were simply being at the right place at the right time. And the whole clutch intangibles, you know, winner nonsense. He's not a winner like people think he is if Mariano Rivera is not on his team. Or if he's not playing on the team with the biggest payroll for the majority of his career. So, you know, those are the kinds of things that I often bring up. So.
Joe, where you live, are you surrounded by Yankee fans?
I haven't pulled the neighbors, but yeah, there's a lot of Yankee fans.
But I mean, is it generally Yankee country where you live? Or?
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's too bad.
You're an outlier there, but that's, you know, bold of you, and God bless you for being there.
Well, you know, I it's barstool chatter, and, you know, one of the other things is, okay, I'll give you 3,000 hits. What else is it going to say on his Hall of Fame plaque? Never
Mika
been an
Kelly.
MVP. Never been an MVP.
That's enough for me.
Yeah. Never won a batting title. You know. Played on the team with the highest payroll and the best closer, you know. I think
it's pretty funny in that Will Ferrell movie.
Jess, you ask me questions and then bring up movies. How am I supposed to participate in this?
That's true. I'm sorry, I left you out again. So I'm guessing the Netflix price hike didn't affect you at all.
What's Netflix?
Exactly. Glad he's not into talkies.
Glad he's still got a Gremlin VHS he hasn't watched yet. Don't feed it after midnight.
What are you talking about? Guys, slow down a second.
Before you talk about the Goonies, say spoiler alert.
That's pretty fun.
I went to the movies, like, I think twice in the calendar year already.
Well, you saw The Fighter.
That was December, and it was awesome. I had known...
It was Oscar season, come on.
I had known a little bit.
He had to fill out his ballot.
Yeah. The King's Speech Impediment or something, I guess.
Speech Impediment.
I gotta watch that. Saw the new Hangover movie. It was what it was. Generated some laughs.
Predictable.
Yeah. Yeah. Rehashed, but... some rehashed bits, but... They were funny the first time, so...
Why wouldn't they be funny the second time?
It's like found on a cocktail napkin. how many Chuck-a-Puck and Doug Whoop jokes can you make? All of them.
Exactly.
So that was good, yeah. I went to see another movie where a guy takes some like pill that makes him crazy smart for limited amounts of time and
gets powerful.
Was that good?
It was all right, yeah. I don't judge movies on being good or bad because I don't see enough of them to know the difference. But
can't remember what it was called, so how good
was I entertained, you know, for my $10 and 90 minutes of sitting there? I guess I was, so. You know, it's not that I don't like movies. I just, there's a lot of other things I'd rather do with a two-hour block of time, you know. Play golf, watch real sports, not the show, watch improper noun real sports, like baseball, National League Baseball.
You didn't drop any Braves knowledge on us.
They're good, man. You're good.
You had the little Braves parade going last night out of the bullpen.
Our bullpen's unbelievable. Our pitching is unbelievable.
Yeah.
It is so nice. Derek Lowe's the highest paid pitcher on staff. He's our fifth starter. So it's nice to roll out great pitching. We haven't hit yet, and we're 16 games over, the third best record in baseball. So
I'll be watching your Braves at 1:10 Mountain Time on Thursday.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Coors Field.
Unfortunately.
No, you won't. We're playing the Nats this weekend.
Thursday.
Next weekend. Next week.
Oh, tomorrow. Not tomorrow, Thursday.
21st or whatever.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Yes. Gotcha.
Went to Citi Field, the Mets Park. Saw the Braves there. Nice place. And the fans weren't a bunch of Jersey Shore idiots like I thought they would be. It was a very pleasant experience. I'd go back.
You went to Cooley Law School Stadium.
I did. One of the great revelations of my summer has been the Lansing Lugnuts fight song, which I love.
Actually, one of the great revelations of my summer has been the BC Lions fight song, which is outstanding.
Oh, it's not as good as Rider Pride, I can tell you that.
Yeah, it
is. My Riders. Oh, the North Dakota folks listen to the podcast will stand up for Rider Pride.
Weston Dressler.
Which Riders?
Saskatchewan Riders.
The only Riders. There's only
they're
one
Riders. They're the only Riders.
Are they the only Riders now?
Oh,
Ottawa's been gone for a long time.
We consolidated Riders?
Yeah, we got one. There's only one Riders. Okay. There's only one Man United, right?
That's right.
There's only one Riders.
Got it.
I saw the Lions and the Stamps in Vancouver. That was last Friday, I think. You know, not bad for a ticket. I paid, what, $40, I think, Canadian, which is like $55 U.S. now. No, it's about the same, but, you know, they're playing in a temporary stadium right by the old Pacific Coliseum, and, Canadian football is kind of wacky, but it's a great show. After I sat there and watched this game, I was sitting in the end zone, maybe 20 rows off the field.
So you're still 40 yards from the goalpost.
Exactly. That's exactly right. After watching that whole game, I'm like, God, why do I watch the NFL?
I don't.
Well, I know you don't, but I'm just saying, God, the NFL has nothing on the CFL. It's passing and marketing. Fast guys and, you know, a lot of one-on-ones and,
I think the NFL would be helped by a bigger field.
I would agree. That makes it. I also think the NFL would be helped by no fair catches and, you know, the game just seems to move along at a quicker pace.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely a lot quicker. It's a lot easier, I think, for people with a limited attention span.
Plus, you got guys going in motion all over the place, and, you know, you can run toward the line of scrimmage, and it's pretty cool. I enjoyed it.
They're pretty good players, too. I mean, I started watching a little bit last summer on, forget what channel was showing
NFL
it.
NFL Network.
Yeah, maybe it was NFL Network. And, you know, I mean, there are names that, you know, you'll even recognize if you watch some college football. So I was pretty impressed when I started to watch it.
Glad I saw Jamichael Dean.
J-Mike. Nice.
I saw Michael Bishop played. Henry Burris.
Henry Burris. Former Viking.
Kenyon Rambo was on the roster, but I did not see him. But I'm in now. I'm all BC Lions.
You're a Lions man.
I am.
Good. Dowd's a Lions man, too.
I am.
Detroit.
Detroit. You know, the other thing that's interesting, the NFL needs to seriously take a look at the CFL, and I can't believe I just said that, and people are going to think I'm nuts, but...
Really? Today they're going to think that?
Yeah, exactly. But there's no... You know how in the NFL you got those big, fat Gilbert Brown guys, like, in the middle, and then you've got these monster guys on the offensive line? There's none of those... I mean, they're obviously big guys. But it's kind of like the old Miami Hurricanes teams from like the Jimmy Johnson era when, you know, he would take the safeties and put them at linebacker and he'd take the linebackers and turn them into DNs. It's all about speed, and so you got these like tall, wiry guys playing defensive end, and it's just, I mean, the speed factor is just so much more a part of that game. You know, it's not just bashing your heads together and going to the huddle and bashing your heads together again. I mean, it's...
There's some movement.
They showcase the skill more.
Maybe Rich Rodriguez should coach up there.
Oh, he'd be great.
That's a very good point, actually.
You're talking about smaller linemen and being more on speed and mobility and everything. It's like, this is everything he was preaching.
And a bigger field. Yeah, more guys.
Can have 6-foot quarterbacks.
Get guys in space, yeah.
Denard Robinson would be filthy in Canadian football.
Well,
he'll get a chance to find out.
Yeah, we'll know soon.
All right, last call. Shoutouts, fellas.
Shout out to Dodger Stadium. For a place that's almost 50 years old. Outstanding ballpark.
Didn't run into any trouble in the parking lot?
Didn't get beaten to within an inch of your life?
I played it smart and wore blue. Nobody messed with me.
All right.
Sad to see what's happened to that franchise, because there were plenty, plenty of good seats available on a Friday night, a beautiful Friday night in June in Los Angeles. Of course, it would be, the weather would be the same in November, so what difference does it make? But nice place and nice time.
Down, shout outs.
Did you have a Dodger dog?
Sorry. I had two. I had two Dodger dogs.
Splurging.
I skipped the ballpark sushi.
I said I'll give my shout out to poster makers in Miami. When I was down there a couple weeks ago, I found a gem in a Walgreens that I wish I'd had time to go back and buy. It was a picture of Wade Bosch and LeBron with flames behind them, and all it said on the poster was "We did it." It's like, no, you didn't.
And in the future, can you specify that as Miami, Florida?
Yes. Miami, Florida.
I thought your poster's in Miami. Well, never mind.
yeah.
I was hoping the headline on that poster said flaming.
Boss?
Also, the Heat owner has a sweet yacht.
Cool.
I was on vacation. I was at a national park the night that the Mavericks won the NBA title. I'm in the hotel lobby just checking email, and the guy next to me says, "Oh, my God, the Mavericks won." He says, "I wish I was at home to celebrate. It's going to be nuts." I said, "Oh, you're from Dallas?" He said, "No, I'm from Cleveland."
Nice. Why were you staying at a hotel in a national park?
Well, it was like a lodge kind of thing.
Kind of park is this?
It was Mesa Verde in southwestern Colorado. It was gorgeous.
No, Ithaca's gorgeous.
Sounds like sounds like Mesa Tenderfoot, if you ask me.
Well, I didn't bring a tent, so sorry. The hotel room didn't have a TV or a phone, if it makes you feel any better.
But yet you went to the lobby to check your email. That's roughing it.
That's how I roll.
He's connected.
Mm-hmm. Connected.
Boss, you shouted out the Lions.
The BC Lions.
Yeah. Anybody else?
No, that's it.
All right.
Travis Lule.
I'm going to shout out that none of us mentioned the Stanley Cup playoffs. And that will do it for the Inch podcast.
You don't want to talk about that?
No, don't want to talk about it. James V. Dowd, Jess Myers, Mike Eidelbus. My name is Joe Gladyszewski. Thank you for listening to the Inch podcast. Yeah!